So thank you. Thank you for the introduction. I did have the opportunity recently to have this kind of a conversation in England. It was in London specifically, where it was unbelievably consistent with the conversations that we're having here. So there were people from all over the world there, and it was all the same conversations, because clearly all of these issues, and in particular all these distribution issues, have become big global conversations. So I feel pretty fortunate in that my background is that I kind of came into all of this after 20 plus years, which is amazing since I'm 30, right? 20 plus years in the advertising space and the media research space. So I worked for a company called Arbitron Ratings. I was on the executive staff when we sold that company over to another company you might have heard of called Nielsen Ratings. So Nielsen Media purchased our company, and then I stuck around there for a bit of time and moved eventually over to another company you probably know, which is Deluxe Entertainment, and I see a couple of my ex-Deluxe friends there. Hey, Andy. So I was able to sort of kind of look at this landscape from an interesting perspective, in that all the issues that we went through in advertising back in the day of what kind of data sets do we need, how do we combine these data sets, how do we integrate them, how do we make them make us smarter and better and stronger, all really apply over on the licensing side of the business as well. So I'm also excited about that, because when you look at an average dollar that a piece of content makes, if it is a piece of content that has ad supported to it, don't just think about traditional ads, though. Think about product placement and all the different things that go into how marketers support content. About 40 cents of it is on the ad side, and about 60 cents of it is on the distribution and licensing side. So we are talking about the biggest pot of money around content monetization, and I think there's a huge opportunity. Eric, wherever he went, was talking about data, and it is the number one theme that I absolutely hear everywhere, and I'm sure you guys have heard it too. It was definitely in London, but it's all about consumer-level data. There is a huge amount of information that people have at their fingertips already on your sales data, but what is not as well known is what's really making a piece of content appeal to the consumer. It's the why, or a particular platform. Why are they choosing it? So we really kind of have spent a lot of time thinking about that. And so today what I'll kind of frame my conversation around is the fact that consumer level data is important because consumers are in control. There definitely needs to be, with all due respect to my old company, there needs to be information that goes well beyond counting eyeballs and bodies. And then, of course, this whole concept of a frictionless distribution, which I know you talked a lot about this morning, if those of you were here too. Oh my God, I should not be driving, obviously. My husband will tell you the same. Okay, so many of you maybe don't know WIP Media Group, so I thought I would just very quickly breeze through this and introduce you. WIP Media Group owns three different companies, and you probably maybe have heard of MediaMorph, because I know MediaMorph has been an active participant in this group. So MediaMorph is the content value management system that works with clients tracking a piece of content as it travels around the globe and looking at the financial successes. TV Time is a consumer-facing app. So TV Time is a global, it has 12 million registered people who come into the app for the purposes of discovering content and then tracking their content. And when they're there, they're engaging around the content. So when we pull the data from the consumer side, we're pulling it out of the TV Time app. And we're pulling all of the reactions and how they're experiencing the content based on all the information that they quite willingly give us because it makes the recommendations even stronger for them. So that's what's in it for the consumer. I'm always asked, do you pay people? You know, no, it's just, it's a value-driven proposition, and the more information you give us, the better your recommendations are going to be. And then we own the TVDB, which is a metadata. It's a crowdsourced, huge amount of information that also feeds the TV Time app and is working inside of MediaMorph. So what we're doing is we're bringing all of these pieces together so that we can help take data, merge it across your sales successes with your consumer insights, and have the ability to make better, stronger distribution licensing decisions. There's just a little overview of some of the clients, and the only reason I point that out is because we do work at scale, which I think is really important when you're working with data. We do measure today, running through the MediaMorph system, about 70% of the digital transactional revenue is running through it. And on the consumer side, there's about 10 million television and movie episodes of how consumers have experienced that. And when you pull all of that together into a single platform that's helping you make content decisions, you have a pretty powerful tool. And I'll give you a quick little success story around that too. Okay. It's been said a lot, you know, that the consumers are driving, but in my entire career history, I've never been in a situation where there are so many choices. And when we have the opportunity to end the relationship with those platforms within two clicks, you know, it is super important that we are all making decisions that are not only attracting consumers, but really keeping consumers. The fall of last year, we did a study that I'll share a couple quick results with you, but the idea that all of this is really exploding, and it's not just content. I have a 12-year-old son. He's my youngest, and he spends, I wish I could be one of those moms that says he spends exactly 15 minutes a day on TikTok, but I'm not. He spends at least an hour a day on TikTok, 15 seconds at a time. And when I dove into it, I realized, you know, he's watching people do surgery on a banana. That, literally, it's one of the top viewed things on TikTok. That's what we're competing with. Banana surgeries in 15 seconds. It's crazy the amount of choices that content is actually now competing with. This is a study that I got from one of our client partners, UTA, and I asked, David actually is doing a big client presentation this afternoon, and I was like, can I just like steal this for a second? So I told him I would credit him with it. But this is a overview of the decline in theatrical money, right? Revenues, box office revenues. So they broke this study out into three key buckets. The first one is the big box office, the tentpole kinds of movies. The second one is animation. And the third one is literally everything else. That is the vast majority of the movies that get made. So it's comedies and dramas and horror and literally everything. So they looked at this across those three key buckets. And if you look at the big, you know, $100 million movies, it's pretty stable, right? I mean, it's not like hugely off, in my opinion. I would say the same thing for animation. Other than a little blip in the middle, it's pretty darn stable in terms of the revenues. But when you look at everything else, which again is the vast majority, there's a bit of a downward line there, which means people aren't going to the movie as much. But that doesn't mean people aren't watching those movies, right? That's your library content that's pretty much all over the place. The question is, how do you choose the best library content for your platform in a way that will ultimately, in many cases, the goal is to have a global piece of content. This is the originals. So when you combine the fact that all of that revenue on the vast majority of movies is down, and then throw in the bucket that back in 2015, there were just three originals, one on Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon. Today, there's 88 originals. you now really have an environment that says there's tons of change, there's tons of content, and we just need to figure out how to really make it effective. We did a study across 7,000 global consumers to try to figure out, is there a ceiling? You know, where will people stop paying for this? And it was interesting, you know, as you guys know, you know, more better than anyone, it ranges, right? There's a huge, vast amount of, and it can also change in some of these cases by country, by territory. But when we went in, I see some of you taking pictures. If I went too fast, we can get you a copy of this, no problem. But when we went in and we started to ask people, you know, what are your thoughts on the environment today? Are there too many choices? And by the way, my custom survey data science people would tell me I should never position things the way I do, so I apologize. But I think, you know, hopefully you know what I'm talking about, right? We didn't ask it like that, but it's basically like, hey, you know, what do you think about all these choices? They were kind of clear. The vast majority think there are too many choices, but they were also extremely clear, but we'll pay for more. If our content is there, we'll pay for it. So it's interesting. I was reading about Friends, and I was reading about the fact that when it got pulled off of Netflix, since the time that it left Netflix, the sale of box set DVDs has tripled. Right? Who said DVDs were dead? Not my 12-year-old. Huh. When you look at that, you know, and you say, okay, people will find their content, people will spend money on their content, it's basically what we saw across the globe. Yes, there's too many choices, and the paradox of choice can have a very, you know, negative impact on businesses at some point in time, as we know. However, I don't think we're there yet. As long as the content is there, people are willing to pay for it. These are really, really high-stakes decisions today. You know, there's billions and billions of dollars that are getting spent on creating television and movie, and it's across everyone. I mean, these are, if you're going to enter the business, you're going to spend a lot of money. So the ability to make really smart decisions is important. One of the things that I learned, you know, from every major marketer for 20 years is brands are successful when they engage with their consumers. And that is a universal truth on brands, right? The word engagement is kind of a crazy word, I've realized, because when I say engagement, I mean all the different things that are sort of around that globe, because that's what we're looking at inside of our data in the TV Time app. We're looking at things like, did people vote on it? Did they tell us how they emotionally felt? Did it make them happy, sad, you know, whatever? Were they posting inside the app or reposting outside of the app? Were they doing memes? There's so many different things you can do, and you could call any number of those things engaging, right? So the idea here is that if they begin to engage and then they start layering the levels of engagement on, you can start to really get a good feel for whether or not consumers are really starting to enjoy this show, and it's starting to take off. And I'm going to give you an example of why I think that's really important. So this is a little quick case study that looks at Lifetime and Netflix, but it is not a story about Netflix. This is a story really more about Lifetime and the program You, because everyone knows if a program goes from, you know, with, again, Lifetime's a great network, but if it goes from a network of that size to a global platform like Netflix, of course they're going to get more audience. So that's a no-brainer. But if you look at what we could see in the data long before it went to Netflix, and if Lifetime would have had that information, you can start to uncover a really interesting story that probably could have changed, and I've actually had this conversation with some of them, and probably would have changed the way they dialogued around the particular show. So what this is, and again, I know it's so small, but when you get a copy of the presentation, you'll see it. But what this is on the left-hand side, this is in September. On the top, it says you. What this report is it's an anticipation report. It says Netflix, but that's only because in our data, we credit the show with the network, and it's on Netflix now. But that data is from September of 18, which is before it went to Netflix. It was showing up as the number one anticipated TV show, inside of our app for Lifetime. So it was very, very, had a lot of attention in terms of anticipation around it. On the right-hand side, it goes down to the bottom, because now, not bottom of the list, but that bottom of the box, because the bottom of the box is about shows returning. So on the left-hand side, it's new shows, because it was brand new to Lifetime. And on the right-hand side, on the bottom there, is when it switched from Lifetime over to Netflix. And by the way, it was still number one on the anticipation list for Netflix. However, if you look at this and really start to break it down, when it was just on Lifetime, what you can see is that the momentum across those weeks was incredible. So all of the shows on the bottom there, they're all kind of, you know, lumped together. I don't know if you can see the gray line, but it goes like that, right? So the momentum of people who were starting to track and engage with that show, you know, the line went straight up, while all these other shows that were on Lifetime were sort of hovering down there on the bottom. Well, that's the first predictor that says, huh, something interesting is happening with this show. When you then go in and you start to break things out a little more, you can see that the average engagement, and this is across multiple feeds, was significantly higher than the average show on Lifetime. So the average Lifetime show had an engagement of about 21%, and that big yellow is 52%. So it had far more engagement, a trajectory growth rate that was going through the roof. And by the way, I've looked at that growth rate against not just Lifetime shows, but across many, many shows. And it was a significant growth rate. And then if you look at retention, which is also a really important metric, it's on the top of that red line. It had the highest retention rate episode to episode to episode. So they were watching from the first episode to the end. So all of these things kind of came together to say, I think there's something really interesting around this show and the possibilities for this show. Now, at the same time, while we're putting it on the most anticipated list, and I actually went on Cheddar and talked about it, the Nielsen rating for it was a 0.2. So that is not a good rating. For those of you who don't know ratings, that would be bad, stinky. And they got canceled, right? It was 0.2 ratings, you don't make money, you need to do something else, and so they went to Netflix. So again, this isn't a story about, oh, we could have told you it would be better on Netflix. Anyone without data probably could tell you that it would have been better on Netflix. But this is a story about predicting the value of this content and whether or not this could have continued to grow and whether or not it could have changed the conversation that could have taken place. And this is valuable information no matter what side of the business you're on. If you're a buyer, if you're a seller, doesn't matter. This is information that helps you make better, stronger, smarter decisions when you're trying to figure out, of all those movies that are now available to go into a library, which ones should you be carrying? So these are the ways that we've been kind of looking at it. So in our opinion, the why behind the watch, getting at that data, combining it with the sales data that is pumping through the MediaMorph system, that transactional data, brings together a picture that we believe more so than anything can help change the way content in the future is bought, sold, and distributed. Because we believe with the use of a lot of our data scientists and a lot of AI that the ability to predict content's success is going to be unbelievable. But you can't do that if you don't have all those different data sets that seamlessly come together. So I think that was my last slide. Thank you.
Awesome. Carol, thank you so much. Set it up perfectly. Great segue. Thank you so much.